Chapter 14. Spring Blossom and I nicknamed some of the women. There was First Wife, who reigned over us like Angel Island was just an extension of the women's quarters in her family's home in China, making us listen to endless talk about her sons and husband. The woman I spilled the plate onto became Big Teeth, because the permanent scowl she wore pushed her mouth out over her chin like it was crowded with giant teeth. Everyone called the oldest woman in the barracks Po Po. She barely spoke, her sorrows etched in the lines of her face. Other names I did not bother to learn. Women came and went on waves of joy, fear, and sorrow. Some were told that they could land and be sent down to the dock to the ferry. The rest of us were left to wait and wonder. One day, a guard handed Snow Lily a letter. Her hands shook as he passed it to her. Then she went back to her bed and lay down, clutching it to her chest. "She is being sent back to China," Spring Blossom whispered. "How do you know?" "That is always what the letter says." My heart started to tremble at the idea of holding a letter someday. That night, I woke to the sound of the other women rising from their beds. Some had gathered at the entrance to the bathroom. Others were huddled in a far corner. I joined Spring Blossom near First Wife's bunk. One of the matrons came out of the bathroom, followed by a guard carrying Snow Lily. She was limp, her chest barely rising and falling. They hurried out of the barracks. "What happened?" I asked Spring Blossom. "She couldn't go back," First Wife whispered. "She tried to hang herself instead." Spring Blossom put her hand over her mouth. Another matron shooed us back into our beds. I stared into the darkness, thinking about what Nushu said, how dangerous desperation can be. The next morning, the events of the night cast a shadow over the women's quarters. A fog had rolled across the island and settled on it, so we could not watch the ferry come and go. The English teacher did not come, and no guards arrived to let us onto the small walkway outside our barracks. Sewing rested in the most industrious hands. Most of us did not even bother to get anything out to do. Women sighed, chairs creaked. Spring Blossom sat in silence the whole morning, a grief-stricken look on her face. I had sat by her at breakfast, which she didn't eat, and asked her questions, which she didn't answer. Now, just as I was considering shaking some reaction from her, she turned to me. "Tell a story, Jade Moon." "Of course. What story would you like to hear?" "Not just for me, for everyone." Big Teeth's scowl deepened. "I have never been entertained by stories. What can stories do for us stuck in this prison?" But the women had already embraced Spring Blossom's request. "Oh, please tell us a story. I need something else to think about. This day will never end if you do not." I shook my head at Spring Blossom. These women would only criticize any story I told. "Jade Moon, you did not mention the lucky charm he carried with him. Or Jade Moon, that story is not as good if you don't describe the fish they had for dinner. Or simply a chorus of, I am a very poor storyteller, but when I tell that story..." But when I saw the sad look in her eyes, I found myself moving to the center of the room and the other women shifted their chairs to face me. "It is important when you tell a story to tell the right story." I studied the women I had lived with for almost 3 months. Some had the even skin of youth, others had the soft line of age around their eyes, eyes that hungered for home. When the women rubbed their hands together in anticipation, they were hands that had sown, cooked, dug soil, birthed children. Everyone wore the dark shadows of grief or fear. I knew the cowherd and weaver story best, and the first words of the story sat on my tongue. But when I looked at the women, I understood what Big Teeth had meant. What would she do with a love story, especially after last night? These women needed a story about people trying to get somewhere impossible. They needed a story about promises kept and broken. A story about sacrificing everything for a chance at something beautiful. I needed that too, and I knew which story I would tell them. I began. There once was a woman who could weave cloth that was so lifelike that the roses she wove into the gardens smelled sweet, and the breeze she wove through the branches brushed against your skin. The women leaned forward, imagining such weaving. Some nodded their heads. She was not a wealthy woman. Her husband had died, leaving her to raise 3 sons. But she worked hard, and she and her sons lived comfortably in a small house on the edge of town. One day, the woman went into town to sell a basket of cloth to a merchant. When she walked into his shop, she saw a painting of a faraway land on the wall. It was like nothing she had ever seen before. In the painting, a beautiful pavilion made of white marble rested at the base of a cliff. Vines twisted up its sides, spraying flowers along its walls. Swaying bamboo surrounded the pavilion, and behind it grew pines where deer nibbled at soft moss on the ground. Beside the pavilion sat a pool of clear water filled with gold-colored fish. "It sounds beautiful," one of the women said. The others mumbled in agreement, and then looked at me to continue. She asked the merchant, "Will you sell the painting?" The merchant shrugged. "I will give you all the cloth I made this month for the painting." The merchant knew a good bargain, and he immediately accepted. I think she should have haggled more over the price to pay a month of weaving, Big Teeth said. But think of how beautiful the painting was, another woman said. Big Teeth nodded and rested her sewing in her lap. True, true. It was beautiful, but when she brought it home and showed it to her sons, they shook their heads. Their mother was getting old. They would have to accompany her to town from now on to make sure she did not make any more reckless bargains. You traded all of your weaving for this? The first son said. You better get back to work. We cannot eat the painting or live in the pavilion, the second son scolded. The third son looked at the painting. My brother is right. We cannot live in the pavilion. But you could weave the scene into cloth, mother. Your weavings are so lifelike. Think of how beautiful it would be. First wife nodded her head. Ah, she does not seem reckless now. That cloth will fetch a heavy price. Exactly, I said. So the woman took the third son's advice and began weaving the picture into the cloth. She worked from early in the morning until the last traces of sunlight faded from the sky. Her first and second sons grumbled because their mother no longer made cloth to sell in town. The sons had to chop firewood to sell instead. But the third son defended her, saying that this was something their mother needed to finish. He chopped twice as much firewood as his older brothers so they would complain less. Meanwhile, their mother continued to work on the cloth. After a year, tears started to flow from her tired eyes. After 2 years, those tears turned into blood that stained the sun in her weaving red. After 3 years, she finally finished. She showed the cloth to her sons, who stood speechless. They could hear the rustling of the bamboo leaves against each other and feel the warmth of the sun on their faces. She laid the cloth on the ground so the heavens could see it. But just as she unrolled the last edge, a gust of wind blew it high into the heavens. The woman wailed. She begged her sons to find it. The eldest son said, I will find it, mother. Then we will sell it and be rich. The son traveled for many days before he came to an old woman sitting in front of her house at the bottom of a snow mountain. Old woman, the first son said, have you seen my mother's weaving? I have, the old woman said. The fairies from Sun Mountain have taken it. If you want to go there, you must take a rock and break off your two front teeth. Place them in my horse's mouth, and he will fly you over Flame Mountain. There, the fire will burn you, but you must not cry out, or you will die. If you make it through that, the horse will take you to the Sea of Ice. What is that? The first son was already losing his courage and almost too afraid to ask. At the Sea of Ice, freezing water and blocks of ice will crash against you, but you must not shiver, or you will die. Then you will come to Sun Mountain, and the fairies will return my mother's weaving. First, you will have to climb to the top of the mountain. Then you will have to convince the fairies to give you the weaving. They may give it back to you, she rubbed her hand along the arms of the chair, or they may kidnap you and keep you as their servant forever. I don't want to go through that for a piece of cloth, the son said. Of course you don't, the old woman said. Why don't you just take this gold and go home? Ah, that isn't a good son, several of the women muttered. She is lucky to have two more, if she can rely on that one when she was old, another said, looking meaningfully at the woman beside her. I waited. Oh, he behaved very badly. He took the gold, but he did not go home. He was greedy, so he decided to live in the city. When the first son did not return, the weaver woman sent her second son to find the cloth. But after the old woman explained the path to Sun Mountain, he also took the gold and went to the city to live. After losing two sons, the old woman did not want to send her youngest son, but he insisted on going. Don't worry, mother. I will bring back your beautiful weaving. When he got to the old woman, she explained what he needed to do. The youngest son did not hesitate. He knocked out his teeth with a rock and placed them in the horse's mouth. The horse flew over Flame Mountain, where the fire licked at the third son, but remembering the cool pool of water in his mother's weaving, he did not cry out. Then the horse took him through the sea of ice, where the frigid waters crashed against him. Still, he did not shiver, thinking of the bright sun his mother had woven warmed his skin. Then he climbed Sun Mountain. When he got to the top, he found the fairies sitting at their looms around his mother's weaving. He told the fairies that it was his mother who had made the weaving and that he had come to retrieve it. They begged him to allow them one more night with the weaving so they could finish their own cloth. The third son agreed, but early the next morning, when the sun began to rise in the sky, the fairies stretched out their weaving next to his mother's and it fell short. One fairy, devastated that she would never have such a beautiful weaving, stitched herself into his mother's cloth and disappeared. The third son rolled his mother's cloth back up and took it back home. His mother felt such peace at having her wonderful cloth back. She took it outside to share with the heavens. Another gust of wind came, but this one did not take her weaving away. It stretched it. The cloth grew and grew until the family's hut disappeared and the weeds from their garden vanished. In their place appeared a white marble pavilion and a grove of bamboo and pine trees, a clear pool of water and a lovely lady in red. It was the fairy from Sun Mountain. The youngest son married her, and they lived in great joy in the paradise the mother had created. One day, two men, dirty and tired, stumbled to the gate and peered inside. They were the two older sons returning from the city penniless. But once they saw that their younger brother had done what they were not willing to do for their mother, they were too ashamed to go in. The women sat in silence for a few moments, then the chorus of voices began. "That story is very true," one said softly. "Yes, very true," echoed another. "Sometimes it seems impossible to hold on to what is most precious," said a woman, shaking her head. "It would be wonderful to have such a lovely place to call home, wouldn't it?" Spring Blossom said. "Without invasions or fighting," Big Teeth said. "Or guards who shout orders no one can understand," another added. "Free from soldiers who look like children," a woman said. "And act like animals," First Wife said. "We all know why she tried to kill herself," said Big Teeth, wiping tears from her eyes. "It sometimes seems like the only escape." A hush settled over the room. "I don't know what my husband was thinking, bringing us here," said one. "I don't know what mine was thinking, leaving us in China for so long," said another. "Dreams come at a high price," one woman sighed. The woman next to her put her hand on the woman's shoulder, and there is no bargaining with luck. "Thank you, Jay Moon," Big Teeth said, getting up and bowing to me. "Yes, thank you," said another, and then another. It felt good, their acceptance. I did not know how much I wanted it. "Now I have somewhere to go when I feel trapped here," said First Wife, and I could tell that she was sitting in the marble pavilion, listening to the bamboo rustle in the wind. The next morning, as I scooped rice from the serving bowl, one of the kitchen workers appeared at my side and began to pour more soggy rice from a pan onto the pile. Without looking at me, he said, "Sterling Promise wants to meet you at the hospital." I looked up at him. "Don't look up," he said. I dropped my head. "Tomorrow morning, pretend you are sick. The guard will take you there." "Why? What does he want?" I asked. But the kitchen worker had already walked away. A guard by the door was staring at me, so I quickly looked at the other direction. The matrons had explained the strict rules against communicating with relatives in the men's quarters. We would be sent back to China if we were caught. Still, I felt a blood of warmth inside at the thought of Sterling Promise taking that risk with me. First Wife leaned over her neighbor and hissed, "What was that about? Who is this Sterling Promise?" "The young man we came with, my adopted brother." "Ah, that explains the wedding handkerchief." The women down at the table nodded and resumed picking at their food. "How does it explain the wedding handkerchief?" I asked. First Wife tilted her head. "Your father is a landowner, yes?" I nodded. "And I believe you are an only child," said First Wife. "He was already adopted by your uncle," one added. "So he says," another pointed out. Their words swirled around me. "It would be an acceptable marriage for a boy with no family," said the older woman. "And I am sure your father wants to see you married," said First Wife. "Then you can bring your bad luck to your husband's house," said Big Teeth, the corners of her mouth lifting slightly as she winked at me. "Seems like a lot of trouble for a match," shrieked Spring Blossom. "But for a fire horse, like this one?" said First Wife, jerking her chin at me. "Yes, of course," agreed the older woman. "A mother-in-law would never allow such disaster. But a young man with no family? Who can inherit land?" I listened as they picked at my life as if it was a piece of their embroidery, pulling apart the messy bits and tying the ends off neatly. "Are you saying that Sterling Promise has agreed to a marriage with me?" I asked. "Unless you have a more pleasant sister he can marry," snorted Big Teeth. "So that he can have a family? Land?" "It isn't for your grace and patience," said First Wife. I shook my head. "How can you be so sure?" "We are women, we know," said First Wife, patting my hand. "Is this why Nushu packed the wedding handkerchief? Is this why all the things in the trunk are mine? Is father leaving me here?" I was dizzy with all the deception. I stood up. "Sterling Promise isn't tricking me. He wouldn't," I said, agitated. "Why would they tell you? They know you will cause trouble," Big Teeth said, shaking her head. "Marriage is good. It will bring you sons," said First Wife. She paused, studying my flushed cheeks. "But love is dangerous." The other women nodded, their eyes deep and dark. I looked at Spring Blossom, but her gaze was fixed somewhere far away.